Penguin Random House Audio presents I'm Not Broken, a memoir. This is the author, Jesse Leon. This book is dedicated to my ama, Linda Sierra, Ricardo Rosario, and my ancestors who paved the way. Prologue. Let's fast forward to the end. I am in the middle of Harvard Yard, proudly sitting on a plastic folding chair, wearing my black cap and gown, surrounded by classmates seated in neat rows and columns. I hear a loud, familiar whisper from behind me. Hey, nerd! Turn around, nerd! Why am I hearing my brother call me nerd? I think to myself without even turning around. Here I am, sweating under my cap and gown on this scorching hot June day, sitting in the middle of Harvard Yard, listening to the commencement speaker on the day of my own graduation, and I am hearing my brother's voice in my head calling me nerd? Damn, I must be going crazy. The truth is, that nickname, which eventually became a term of endearment from my brother and my closest friends, started out as one of my brother's many forms of bullying me for being a smart, nerdy kid. My friend sitting behind me taps me on the shoulder. I turn around to find my brother slouched down at the end of the row where I'm sitting. He's wearing creased out slacks and his nicest short sleeve guayabera shirt. He's waving at me with his tattoo covered arm. My brother is not unassuming. He's 5 feet, 10 inches tall, muscular, and covered in tattoos from his neck down. He tends to get noticed wherever he goes and whether he wants the attention or not. I'm sure people are wondering about the buff, tatted, gangster-looking guy creeping along the rows of chairs on the plush green lawn surrounded by classic brick buildings. Thousands of graduates, family members, alumni, and faculty are gathered to celebrate Harvard's 350th graduation day ceremonies for the college and all the university's graduate schools. And there's my brother taunting me. Nerd, he calls me. What the fuck are you doing? I hiss back. I can't believe this is happening. I feel the tension of breaking etiquette tightening around me. Everyone else is adhering to the rules of decorum. I feel embarrassed, yet protective. Despite the years of angst between us, I want to guard my brother and my family against any judgment that might be cast their way. Any glares that would show others we are out of place. Hey, nerd, Ama's not feeling well. She feels dizzy, her feet are swollen, and there's nowhere for her to sit in the shade. It's way too hot out here. She doesn't want to leave, but I'm taking her somewhere cool where she can sit before she passes out. His voice quivers with nervousness. He points in the direction where they'll be, as if he actually knows where he's going. We'll see you at the apartment before the afternoon ceremonies. The students around me give him confused looks as the tassels on their caps wave around with the movements of their heads. It is clear no one can believe that my family would leave just because it is too hot. This is the day, and my brother and mother are leaving. I can't help but laugh bitterly at the situation. Only my family, only my brother would not give a fuck about protocol or etiquette. Not even for our commencement speaker. Family always comes first, and our mom's health always takes precedence. Okay, I say. I'll see you all later. I put my head down. I feel disappointed, and a few tears escape my eyes and roll down my cheeks. The student sitting next to me puts his hand on my lap to comfort me as I wipe my face dry. Getting into and graduating from Harvard is a big deal to me, but I understood. My mom, who I call Ama, had survived 2 heart attacks and struggled with high blood pressure and severe diabetes. I remind myself that she and my brother had come all the way across the country from San Diego to be with me. And that is what matters most. And yet, the disappointment wells in my chest and in my eyes as I lift my head back up to look forward and face the rest of my big day alone. My best friend Ariel and her mom Joy are here too. But my family leaving still cuts deep. Two tears in a bucket. Fuck it, I tell myself in a whisper. I took out a loan for $2,500 to fly my family out to see me graduate, because otherwise it wouldn't have made it. My mother at first wasn't planning to come because she had already seen me graduate from community college and UC Berkeley. Those graduations were enough, she'd said. And to her, it didn't make sense for me to incur additional fees on her behalf for yet another ceremony. She didn't understand how significant it was for me, and she didn't want to be a burden. She didn't want to make my load any heavier. In the end, I just paid. I wanted Ama, my brother, my little sister, my brother's wife, and my two nephews to be here so that they could watch a poor, sexually abused, drug-addicted Chicano kid get his master's degree from Harvard, of all places. Dad was too frail to make the trip because of his age and his early onset of dementia. My sister stayed back to care for him. Getting the others here, in many ways, had felt like pulling teeth. But here they were on my day, and I was glad for that. For this day meant the world to me. I was 26 years old and had been through hell to get here. Ultimately, I was proud, and I was proud for my family to be here. This is my story, the story of the pains and the miracles that led me to this day on the Harvard yard, where I felt the hot sun on my face and for the first time felt my life was laid out boundlessly before me. As for so many others like me, this was not what was supposed to happen. And yet, here I was. I survived. I was not broken. This was me. And I had made it here. But to get to where we are, we have to come from somewhere. So this is also the story of my family. Esperanza, or Espy, who I call Ama, didn't stay in school past fifth grade in Mexico, where she grew up. Since arriving in the United States, she had spent most of her life working periodically as a nanny, a farm laborer, and a dishwasher. She didn't even know what Harvard was. But when I was 4 years old, she made sure to place me in Head Start, an early education program for low-income families where she volunteered between her two jobs. When I was in elementary school, she was PTA president. She cared so much about our education that she got a part-time job at the school's cafeteria serving lunch. She became known as the Lunch Mom. During the 2 hours between her breakfast and lunch shifts, she volunteered at the school, doing whatever she could to make it a better place. She stayed there as I progressed to middle school and high school. When I was a kid, I never thought twice about the types of jobs my mom worked because so many of my friends' parents were farm workers and dishwashers. I was happy when my mom got a job at the school cafeteria because it made her happy. It gave her and us stability. At least that's what I overheard her tell the neighbors. For me, though, that job became a thorn in the side. Every time I'd get into trouble, the teachers or other students would tattle to my mom. And my mom didn't talk quietly. She talked by yelling. So every time she heard I was up to no good, she would find me in class, pull me hard by the arm, and shout at me to behave. In front of other students and teachers, I would be filled with shame. It felt like my mom always had eyes on me. She was there to pressure me to make sure I did well in school. I didn't like Ama yelling at me, although she never told me this herself. I felt like I was making her look bad in front of people, especially the teachers. So I tried my best to not disappoint my mom. Ama was a healthy, solidly built woman standing at 5 feet, 5 inches tall with the round face and glasses. I remember she had wavy black hair that flowed down to her waist. But at some point, while I was still a young kid, she cut it short for practical reasons. It was too thick to maintain while raising kids, and was especially inconvenient when working in kitchens.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?